You're listening to the GamesIndustry.biz podcast. I'm James Batchelor, and this week I'm joined by...
Matt Handrahan.
Rebecca Valentine.
And Mike Williams.
We'll be discussing the biggest story of the week, which in this case is the departure of Casey Hudson and Mark Dara from BioWare. Hudson was the general manager for the studio, Dara was executive producer on Dragon Age. Both have worked at BioWare for more than 20 years, albeit with Hudson working a few years at Microsoft before he then came back to BioWare. In blog posts, each of them did a blog post. EA Chief Studios Officer Laura Miel in hers said she thanked the pair for their work and reassured that the work on the new Dragon Age title and the Mass Effect Legendary Edition is proceeding as planned. Now, there were mixed reactions to the departures. There was a lot of knee-jerk stuff, which I have to admit I was guilty of. There's a lot of, you know, like, oh, this is a disaster. There's a lot of people that know it's going to be fine. My initial reaction was relief, because... it's been such a quiet week. I honestly didn't know what we'd discuss on the podcast this week. So I almost want to thank thank Casey and Mark for leaving so that we can have this discussion. Matt, I'm going to turn to you first, because this is... we were oddly prescient a couple of weeks ago in the on our Games of the Generation episode, which if you haven't listened to, you really should go back. You listed as your biggest disappointment of the past generation as BioWare. And I think that was like a sentiment that got explored a lot, certainly on Twitter last night. Your thoughts on this, on these departures?
Yeah, well, I think Casey Hudson is the more striking one to me, because I think that, not only because I'm just far more familiar with Casey Hudson's work than I am Mark Darrow's, in I'm more specifically familiar with Casey Hudson as a person. I've interviewed the guy in the past and like read loads of interviews with him as well. I think... the striking thing about that is I remember when Casey Hudson came back to BioWare from Microsoft, August 2014. This was like 2 years after Greg Zeschuk and Ray Musica, who were the two of the original founders of BioWare, and well, many saw as like the heart and soul of the company, to less than 2 years after they announced their decision to leave at the same time, quite unexpectedly. I remember when Casey Hudson came back to BioWare, there was kind of a sense of, oh, okay, you know, this is a guy that knows the company and he's going to be a steady hand on the tiller. And that sort of sense of what's going to become of BioWare without Ray and Greg, who were, you know, two fairly beloved characters in the industry, I would say, like definitely like really nice people. I met them both a couple of times, really good interviews. You know, that Casey Hudson was the kind of person you want to see returned. He had some of the, yeah, just some feeling for the company in, you know, in a way that people were starting to get the sense that maybe would be lost with the founders gone. So to see his name once again down as leaving the company, and leaving the company at a time when, I mean, I don't want to skip too far ahead in terms of talking points, but like Laura Miel's statement just rings kind of hollow, because it isn't like we've seen loads of the new Dragon Age game or it's coming out in 6 months' time. It's like, yeah, work will continue on Dragon Age. Well, yeah, we hope so, because we've not even seen a hide nor hair of it yet. You know, and if these people were people who were like leading those projects in very integral creative ways, that really does not spell good things for the project itself. In my opinion, if the game were coming up for launch, even a year out from launch, and most of the work has been done, you know, in terms of the vision being laid down and so on. But we're still in a position where these are the games that people want to see from BioWare. We haven't really seen them in any great way yet, and it's a very visible departure. The thing that's difficult to say is exactly how important it is, because we don't know for sure what, you know, what role Casey Hudson would play in this, how integral he is to these projects. It just feels like another very visible blow for a studio that has had no shortage of visible blows over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and he came back in 2017 to get Anthem out the door as general manager of the studio. So to see him leave 3 years later feels like, I mean, I know they're still working on Anthem, but it feels mentally like a nail in a coffin for that game. Just like, oh, that didn't work. So I'm out again. Even though that they're working on Dragon Age, and they've said they're working on another Mass Effect. And games, as others have pointed out, are more than one person or two people at the top. But what you're sort of trading on in many of these cases is trust in the name. And Mark Dara and Casey Hudson, there was a certain amount of trust tied to those names. So they BioWare may have teams of excellent writers and designers and directors that are working on the next Dragon Age and next Mass Effect, but I guess some of the enthusiast trust is lessened without some of those names behind it.
There was a conversation going on Twitter yesterday about this news, where a lot of people were sort of, so, you know, this news comes out, everybody who is a big BioWare fan is, you know, very upset, expressing that upsetness on Twitter, and there was sort of a pushback against it, especially from developers, people who were saying, you know, games are not made by one person. Games are made by massive teams of people, and, you know, glorifying, you know, someone who's listed as a creator or listed, you know, as a producer or whatever, sort of negates the hard work that a lot of other people do. And I agree with that completely. But I also, I think it's still not a great sign when a bunch of the people largely responsible for certain creative visions that were beloved are all of a sudden disappearing, right? Like you can't look at that and say, yes, this is business as usual.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's, I mean, this is the unknowability of it, is why. So for me, someone like Casey Hudson, who obviously came out, yes, to get Anthem out the door, but I think certainly the perception when he left previously in 2014, it was sort of interpreted as, you know, well, maybe needing a new challenge, but also BioWare kind of wasn't sort of a place that he wanted to stay. And what we saw coming after 2014 was disappointed a lot of people, disappointed a lot of fans of the studio. I mean, it's easy to kind of create a false narrative out of these sorts of details, but it also, there's not really been many reasons to attach good, positive narratives to BioWare in all of the time since 2014. So you kind of get a sense that maybe BioWare was not a place that he necessarily wanted to be. He came back and evidently is still not somewhere he wants to be. And I think one thing that you've seen on social media is a lot of people's desire for BioWare to bounce back, to return, to get somewhere near where it was in, you know, 2012, for all that Mass Effect 3 caused a lot of problems, it's still a very, very good game in my estimation. And as we pointed out on our Games of the Year podcast, you kind of look at the sort of 5-6 years of BioWare leading up to Mass Effect 3 and then compare it with the 5-6 years that followed. And it is night and day in terms of sort of the quality of the products, the consistency of the vision, just the sense of identity, I guess. And the thing for me, at least, and this is purely subjective, is I've taken heart a little in the last 6 to 12 months, because there has been a sense, and I feel like EA has played this up as well, that BioWare is kind of returning to that sort of golden period between like 2007 and 2012, 2013, when it did release the Mass Effect trilogy and the Dragon Age series, and so on. But then this does feel like a blow to that narrative, the way the narrative was bouncing back,
I mean,
moving in a more positive direction, at least to me. I don't know if it feels like that to everybody else.
Yeah, I think there's almost two sides to it, in that, as Rebecca says, people get very attached to names, specific names. And I think part of that is because, yeah, hundreds and hundreds of people work on these games, but that's kind of too big to fathom. So, like, the idea of thanking, like, this team, whereas if you can thank, like, one person, like, when you read a book, when you watch a film, you know that you know that the author or the director is the one responsible for the things that you enjoy and maybe responsible for the things you didn't. Like, to use an example, like Lord of the Rings, like, for the hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people that worked on that, and, you know, think how long those credits are. Everyone, it's clearly Peter Jackson that was the driving force behind all of it. And I think we all kind of apply, or certainly a lot of people apply that thinking to games. So as Rebecca said, you kind of get attached to the people and those names. But there's also, kind of to Matt's point, the trust in the name of the studio. And then regardless of the people that are there or not there, that expectation doesn't change. So BioWare is certainly a name that you know, if you hear a new BioWare's coming out, a new Mass Effect, a new Dragon Age from BioWare, or a new IP from BioWare, your instant thought is, oh, great, this is the team who did this game, this game, this game. You know, Mass Effect, Knights of the Old Republic, Jade Empire, that sort of stuff. To use an example there, purely because Chris isn't here, although I do have notes for him for as and when they crop up, Rare is a prime example. Rare has that kind of prestige and that name around it that when it was sold from, you know, sold by Nintendo to Microsoft, when it produced games for Xbox, people kind of expected them to be of Rare quality, despite the fact that over the years, some people left. Today, people still expect, oh, Rare, these are the people who did all these games back in the day. And Rare did bounce back. And this kind of goes to what Matt was saying, like, BioWare will hopefully bounce back. But it took a long time. And it is now completely different people.
I think that something else to sort of think about, just that kind of goes with everything that everyone else is saying, and we've talked about this on the show before. We've talked about it. So we don't know really what's going on with BioWare. We have a lot of guesses, but we don't know. We just have this instinct that it's not great, that things are not, in whatever way, they are not the way they were at the time when the studio was producing, say, like, you know, the original Mass Effect trilogy or whatever. And I think just something that adds to that is the fact that, you know, we see high profile departures at studios, obviously. You know, people move around, people get different jobs, people want to try different things. But kind of the general cycle of those is that people tend to leave after a game has been shipped. Like, you know, so that there'll be a big, you know, good game, it'll get shipped, and then maybe, you know, a couple months, maybe 6 months, maybe even not quite a year will go by. And then we'll see, you know, the people who were largely in charge of that project, you know, leave and go move on to other things because they have made the thing. And now, you know, even if things went well, maybe they want a different challenge. Maybe they've gotten a different offer. Maybe there's something else they want to do. Maybe they want a break. You don't see them now, kind of in the place that BioWare is, unless there's something kind of weird going on, right? Like they have this Dragon Age game that's, you know, been announced and teased, but, you know, we can't even really solidly call it Dragon Age 4 because we're not really sure what it is. You know, we have this Mass Effect remaster, but that's, you know, not really, that's not like a brand new game, so that's not quite on the same level, right? We have this giant Anthem overhaul that is supposedly going on right now that we have not yet seen. So they're kind of in this middle period where we know they're working on a bunch of things, and it seems really weird for people who have shaped and been in charge of these IP for so long to leave now of all times.
Yeah, and I think part of it is even if they bounce back, and they entirely can. They have talented people over there. The problem is that when BioWare was rising, I don't think, like, BioWare rose from that Xbox period from PC into mainstream, and the market was not as big. But, like, yesterday when I went through it and thought about it, like, you got Cyberpunk 2077 coming out very soon. Wizards of the Coast is building Archetype Studios in Austin, Texas, to make RPGs. Obsidian got bought by Obsidian and InXile got bought by Microsoft. And Larian Studios has sort of risen into mainstream viability. So the original situation that made BioWare what it was in the mainstream, now we have a whole bunch of other contenders who are all doing excellent work. So there's a lot more competition there. So, like, now when the next Dragon Age comes out, it's going to be compared to Cyberpunk 2077. It's going to be compared to Baldur's Gate 3. Many of whom these newer games are based on sort of ideas and themes and motifs that BioWare itself laid down during its heyday. So,
Yeah, no, I think that's kind of my feeling in terms of why it feels disappointing that they're the position we understand BioWare to be in, as Rebecca points out, with these projects, you know, bubbling up, new Dragon Age, new Mass Effect, not just the remasters, but a new Mass Effect. It just, like, I think for BioWare fans, and I am one myself, you would kind of want people like Mark Darrow and Casey Hudson to want to be part of those, but they obviously don't want to. Now, the unknowable is why that is, and it isn't necessarily because those projects aren't good, and it isn't necessarily because they don't have faith that EA, you know, will will allow those projects to be what they could be. And it isn't necessarily because there isn't anybody else who could do as good a job. That's the part we don't know. I think it's just after, you know, Dragon Age Inquisition being decent, Mass Effect Andromeda being, you know, I didn't think it was actually a bad game at all, but it definitely was a bit of a PR disaster. Then Anthem being...
It was fine. It just wasn't fine. The Mass Effect trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. It was, you know, it was fine. But also it was kind of very buggy when it launched and there was the Faces thing. It was a bit embarrassing. And also a bunch of stories about crunch and stuff around the launch of that game. Like, that was not a good period for BioWare, even besides the game. Anthem being a proper disaster, as much as you get in the AAA world these days with kind of how tightly controlled productions are. Like, you don't really see that level of slip-up all that often anymore. It just kind of feels like that BioWare could have done without such a visible display that can very easily be interpreted as a show of lack of faith in where the company is going from two very, very public and visible figures. That's kind of the thing. It sort of speaks to the wilderness period narrative that BioWare is in the middle of. To your point, James, we speak about Rare. You know, Rare, for all that anyone who loves the studio, and there is a member of our team who isn't here, and I'm probably quite glad about it, because every time I say anything about Rare, Chris normally knows far, far better what's going on. But, you know, for me, Rare had a good 10 years of not quite being the studio that you wanted it to be. 10 years dominated by Kinect. I'm pretty sure they've kind of claimed that that was their choice, but they can say that a billion times and I will never, ever believe them. You know, it took a decade for Microsoft to allow Rare to be Rare again. And I think the temptation is to think that kind of EA hasn't really allowed EA to be BioWare for the past few years, and that we were about to enter a period where maybe BioWare could be BioWare again, and then something like this happens, and you're like, hmm.
And I think that is also part of the thing when I talked about this on Twitter yesterday, is that there is perhaps maybe some hope and sense in the success of Jedi Fallen Order and Star Wars Squadrons that maybe EA will look at those and say, okay, we can just release a straight single player experience or a relatively small multiplayer experience. We don't need to release all the modes. We don't need to put in all the microtransactions. We don't need to get all the money or create the most broadest product possible. We can just release this. And seeing that, there's the hope that maybe BioWare can get in on that action and maybe just like, look, Mass Effect 3's multiplayer was pretty good. Some people liked it, but maybe the next Dragon Age can just be a single player RPG and that's it.
Mm. Certainly from my experiences of Dragon Age Inquisition. So I loved Origins. I loved Awakening. I missed 2. I really should go back and play 2 now that's on EA Play. But Inquisition felt like an MMO that had been stripped down to a single player game. So I kind of see your point. Like, the Squadrons was brilliant. Like, so the idea of, yeah, you know, maybe you can just release these shorter single player games, maybe a KOTOR 3. That's the inevitable, that's the inevitable hope from certain corners of Twitter. It would have been great to see a bit more faith in single player games again, rather than these all encompassing money grabbing live service games. Yeah.
You know, honestly, now that I'm thinking about it a little bit more, with everything that BioWare has kind of been going through over the years, I would really like to see them, with the team that they have now, try for a new single-player focused IP, right? Like, so they tried a new IP, Anthem, and that was, you know, what it was. But yeah, I think it would be interesting to see them get... I mean, they're going to have to keep making Dragon Age games. I think they may have hit a point where if they didn't make a new Mass Effect game, people would be upset, but it wouldn't be, like, the end of the world. But I would really love to see them just, like, try something new and break away from the expectations of what these two IP are supposed to be. Because they have a lot of talented people working for them, but I think that because there is just, like, this heavy expectation that those games, you know, be whatever everyone's favorite game in the series was... It's really hard for them to innovate or do anything really wonderful. But I also think that if they just, you know, keep going down the Anthem route, then, you know, we're going to have other problems with, I don't know, EA trying to, I don't know, kind of the theory that EA is like trying to influence things too heavily and push things in more of a heavily monetized direction or something like that. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think EA executives, and I am now kind of going off the top of my head here, but I'm pretty sure I could pull up the quotes if I had enough time. We just don't have the time today. But certainly EA executives were making, I think it was kind of when Peter Moore was still there, possibly when John Ricciello was still CEO, we did clearly say they weren't really interested in games that couldn't be monetized kind of way after launch and so on, didn't have multiplayer modes attached. But that was a very, very prevalent way of thinking about games at that point of time in the industry, and still is today, really. I mean, one of the things that's one of the things that defines Sony as a first party producer of games is that it we've talked about it many times in this podcast. It's committed to spending all this money on single player games, and who actually does that anymore? You know, it's not really around, and that's kind of what BioWare was famous for. And a lot of the compromises felt in the games that have followed in the kind of the wilderness period, which is, you know, what I'm calling it, and I will not be contradicted on the fact that it definitely is a wilderness period. They have felt, you know, they have felt that those are the sorts of compromises that have been felt. And again, it's, no one will ever say any of this stuff on the record, but I just would never, ever believe that those ideas came from within BioWare. At least they didn't necessarily come from within BioWare without knowing full well that the management at EA would be much more likely to green light something if it had all of these bells and whistles and monetizable opportunities attached. I mean, I think that is where this kind of sense of sort of stasis and malaise around BioWare within the fan base has come from. It's just the sense that it isn't able to express itself in this way. And like, if you do think about other companies that have had these kind of wilderness years, I mean, we talked about Rare, and again, like, it's difficult to look at the 10-year period between sort of Viva Pinata 2 and Sea of Thieves and not kind of notice the name Kinect cropping up again and again and again in everything that Rare was doing. That's doesn't seem to be an accident. I'm not saying Kinect Sports was bad, but like, I feel like, I'm James, you're a Rare fan, I would say, right?
Yep.
That among Rare fans, is the Kinect era really celebrated as alongside the best of the company's output, or is that the part where people like fell off a little bit?
That's definitely where I fell off, certainly. Yeah, like the Kinect games are not well regarded by the Rare fans that I know.
Yeah, and like, and another example, the one that comes to mind is Monolith Productions, which had an absolutely brilliant run of games between sort of 2000 with No One Lives Forever through the Fear games, the Condemned games. That kind of lasted up until about 2008, 2009. And then it had sort of 6 years where it had like Gotham City Imposters, and there was a kind of an average Lord of the Rings game, which... And again, you just got the sense that Warner Brothers was like, no, 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 none of this new IP business anymore. Here's Batman, here's Lord of the Rings, make us games. And they were both pretty average and they didn't really do very much. The good thing about Monolith, and the good thing about Rare as well, but like, Monolith's a good example. Then it went on to make the Middle of Earth, Shadow of Mordor, Shadow of War games, which, while Shadow of War was definitely not as good as the first one, showed that a talented studio will find ways to recover, I guess.
And yeah, both of those Rare games. As well.
Yeah, the Nemesis system, I thought, was... Like,
no, that's what I'm saying, hard. Yeah. Shadow of War was less good than Mordor. Mordor was Game of the Year stuff for me.
Yeah.
I'm saying they're good games. That's when the Wilderness period kind of stopped. It was the two games in the middle. They're sort of 2011, 2012. Sort of right between Condemned 2 and Shadow of Mordor. And they just felt like an imposition on the part of the parent company. Make games with these IP.
Yeah, and you can point to games like Shadow of Mordor. Assassin's Creed is, for the most part, single player. The Witcher 3, like, built an entire empire. Being wholly single player and just selling and selling and selling. And as you say, Sony can get away with it because the business is slightly different being first party, but there's still a lot of money to be made in just making a single player game. And if you do it right, you can still even do your little side monetization thing, because Ubisoft does it all the time.
Mm.
And people have a problem with it, but for the most part, there's a large customer base that just buys the single player, like buys a Watch Dogs or buys an Assassin's Creed, and probably never thinks about the monetization at all. So, I mean, there it's not to say that you can't draw a little bit more blood from that stone. You just have to, I guess, think about the monetization differently than I feel like EA did at one point. And again, like pointing at Jedi Fallen Order's success, I think kind of surprised them in that it felt like they kind of shoved it out the door really quickly. Maybe before all the bugs had been tamped out, and then it turned around and sold very well. And then they were like, well, damn. And Star Wars Squadrons feels like a game that was just sort of like on the side. And a bunch of people were passionately working on it. And then EA was just like, ah, sure, release it. And now that game is getting free updates, even though when it was released, they said, this is it. Like, this is all you're getting. Which says to me that it must have done at least pretty well for EA. So I'm hoping that the success on the Star Wars side sort of tells EA management that there's a bit of room to play around here. You can have your FIFA Ultimate Team and your Madden Ultimate Team, and then you can also have another side of the publisher that maybe does different experiences.
Semi-serious question. Are there enough familiar and popular Dragon Age characters for a Dragon Age Ultimate Team mode yet?
Not being a Dragon Age person, but I feel like
there must be, right?
Even all the people on my Twitter feed that are in love with half of the Dragon Age cast, I think so.
I have several friends, three friends at least, that purchased fairly large, fairly expensive Dragon Age or Mass Effect character statues. So
yeah,
yes,
yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, so here's the thing with the new Dragon Age game. Like, EA could, I'm pretty sure what EA will eventually do is, when we're actually ready to properly see what the new Dragon Age game is, they probably will say it's single player only, and they will reap the adulation that will come from just doing the obvious thing and letting BioWare make a single player RPG game again. You know what I mean? Like, they will do the thing that always should have been being done by BioWare anyway, and they will act as if it's some great innovation. But like, if it is successful, they will immediately have a trading card game, like a Gwent type thing lined up, and there will be these other ways of going into it. But I think we've been relatively down on EA the last few podcasts because we had the one about FIFA, which, you know, objectively has a few problems. And we had this one, and my big disappointment of the generation with BioWare and all of this sort of stuff. But I do think, and to the point about Casey Hudson leaving, I did get the sense that EA had realised its mistakes with BioWare, had realised that maybe, whether it came from BioWare or not, that having BioWare make a game like Anthem rather than making a new Dragon Age was probably maybe not the right way to go. And that really what people want from BioWare, and to Mike's point again, and there is no shortage of evidence that a single player RPG can be absolutely phenomenally successful, like truly phenomenon level successful. That it has no reason not to go back to first principles with BioWare. Let BioWare be BioWare, give the fans what they want, because it's not a niche market, and it doesn't mean that you're only going to sell 5 million. You can sell 30 million with a game like that. It just has to be really, really good. And BioWare, at least once upon a time, had the talent to make a game like that.
Yeah, and I think, like, I tend to call them prestige games. You can be a publisher that is going to release, like, a fully monetized live service game, but every now and then you need to throw out a prestige game, which is that single player, maybe a little bit more cinematic and narrative driven, that just sort of people can buy, they can play, and then they can walk away happy. And you're not going to make all the money on it, but it makes you look good as a publisher or as a platform to have at least a few prestige games. And I think for EA, BioWare can be the studio that can deliver that style of game for them.
It also, I mean, it does end up driving them to their multiplayer games too, especially with their current business model, right? Because they have EA Play, you know, they have that now on Xbox true. Game Pass. I mean, I show up on EA Play, I show up through something like Xbox Game Pass. I have that anyway. When I got my Xbox Series S, I saw EA Play was on there, and I was going through and looking at all the different EA games that they had, and, you know, I picked up, like, Dragon Age, and I downloaded one of the Dragon Age games, and I was thinking, well, you know, I'd like to play this. Well, now I have that, and maybe that keeps me around. Maybe that keeps me engaged in EA Play. Maybe I start looking at other EA games and end up in, you know, some of the other ones that do have that ongoing monetization. I mean, that's probably not everyone, but, you know, having those strong single-player games does get more different kinds of players into their ecosystem.
I mean, there's not going to be a better way to prepare people for a new Mass Effect game than having the remastered Mass Effect trilogy available on all new platforms as well, right? Like, that's going to re-energize and get that appetite going again. I mean, I think we are probably going to end up looking back on the last however many years as a wilderness period for BioWare, because I don't see any real reason why the new Dragon Age game in the mold of what the series started out as, and a new Mass Effect game in the mold of what the series started out as, would be anything other than great. The general worlds of those games, the universes, could support more video games than were made originally, than the original three Mass Effects, Andromeda aside, the original Dragon Age games. So there is more to mine there, and I think there's abundant appetite for that kind of content if the quality is there.
And going back to first principles doesn't necessarily need the original talent that was behind it. So I am now going to bring in the notes from Chris Stringer. We've kind of hinted at him throughout the podcast, but Chris Stringer, our head of B2B, Sea of Thieves correspondent and resident opinion haver, obviously sent me a couple of paragraphs for this. He mentioned that a couple of games that he plays, and I kind of agree with these points, like Breath of the Wild and Resident Evil 7. Both go back to first principles of their series. Resident Evil 7 goes straight back to being horror. Breath of the Wild goes back to the very concept of exploration and freedom from the original 1986 NES game. They are led by different people than worked on the original ones, or worked even on previous games in the series. And even that, like the example he gives here, Breath of the Wild, actually that was led by the same directors as Skyward Sword, which was not good, but it's a good example of a team that can react very well to feedback. To continue through his example, Mario is no longer made by Miyamoto. Tomb Raider isn't even made by the same studio, let alone the same talent, and arguably it's better than it's ever been. He says, I think we are such a young industry, we've not got our heads around the idea of games and studios being passed on to a new generation. Nintendo is a good example of a business which does that. So, like, yeah, I think the idea of new talent coming in and taking these things, taking these already popular properties, bringing new ideas to them, or kind of taking them straight back to what made them great in the first place, that can be a good thing. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for from BioWare now.
I mean, that notably, though, in both of those examples, I think it's different for Zelda and Resident Evil, because it's like the games press has a rule to never say a Zelda game isn't really amazing. Like, go back and look at review. I mean, you talk to people about Skyward Sword, they don't, you know, there's a lot of unkind things said about it. Look at the reviews. Like, it's, you know, it's not.
Yeah, no, I still don't understand at the time. That. I do not understand that one.
Our very own Eurogamer gave it 10 out of 10, you know. So, I mean, but I think there is that. But certainly, in both of those cases, in general, there was a sense that the franchises in question had, like, were spinning their wheels, had hit a wall, had gone down the wrong path. It's not really so much about getting used to the idea of IPs being passed down over to a new generation. That happened potentially in both circumstances, but the reason why it was passed over was because the franchises were not progressing or evolving in the right way. They weren't improving the quality. They were sort of in stasis, or in the case of Resident Evil, had become straight action games. Bad decisions had been made. So it's not like the baton was passed to a new generation and everybody didn't like the new games that generation made. That's not what happened. The baton was passed because it was time for new ideas in the series and everybody was ready for it. So I think I do agree with what Chris is saying, but I guess I feel like the reasoning isn't quite what he's presenting it as, because it makes it seem like gamers don't want new teams to make games. But in both of those occasions, gamers embraced the new teams making the games, and actually it should have happened sooner.
Yeah, I agree.
Someone defend Skyward Sword. I don't know. I've never played it. I will not defend Skyward Sword.
No, you cannot defend Skyward Sword.
I didn't play it.
But like even like in the case of Resident Evil, that's a good one because they sort of went further afield, and then the team that worked on Resident Evil 7, which brought back the roots, was actually the part of the team that had been making, I think, was Resident Evil Revelations, which was the smaller, more Resident Evil-y Resident Evil. And I guess Capcom at some point was like, okay, yeah, we went too action-y. Now we're pulling it back and we're going to give it to the team that's working on more Resident Evil style games and see what happens. And that was Resident Evil 7 Biohazard, which was great. And then like they're sort of buoyed at the same time from that and remaking the Resident Evil 2 and 3, which also turned out very well by focusing on what fans really like about Resident Evil. And I think there's something to be said of BioWare going in that direction and embracing what the fans really love about Dragon Age. And the fans will tell you very loudly. So, don't fully listen to them. Otherwise, it's going to be some dirty, near erotic shit.
But
you can get very close in a nice mainstream RPG.
Yeah, just for everybody's information, the Metacritic average for Skyward Sword is 93.
Which is
very high for a game that everybody describes as bad. I tell you, it's a Zelda conspiracy in the games press. No one's allowed to say they're bad.
And I can only assume that is so high because that is the game that finally justified the Motion Plus. That can be the only reason.
Yeah, Skyward Sword was the one that I bought. I bought the special edition with the gold Wiimote.
Yep.
And I played it for 10 hours and then I just stopped. And that is the only time I've ever done that with any Zelda game. And so I never really went back. I think I played it a little bit more and then I was like, nope, I'm just not interested.
I'm going to take us on one more tangent, primarily because we're already quite a way into the episode, so I don't want to start too broad a discussion. But there is another element here that, and this may not be intentional on Casey and Mark's part, but lead talent stepping down makes way for new talent and hopefully makes way for more diverse talent. So in Laura Meal's blog post, she mentions some of the people that are still at the studio. And one of them she calls out first is Samantha Ryan, who previously Warner Brothers Games, then came to Electronic Arts. She is continuing to oversee the studio. So, you know, how many AAA studios are being overseen or run by a woman? Mark and Casey, as talented as they are yet more white males in the games industry. So this kind of makes way for more talent. I say that because at the time that we're recording this, we're obviously putting the final touches on the first wave of profiles for the GI 100, which you can read about on the site. One of the ones I've been writing, someone mentioned that there is a couple of co-founders, trio of male co-founders for a studio stepped down and offered the CEO role to a woman who worked at the studio. And she says, giving up power is quite a radical act. And it's one that's very, very rarely seen in the industry. I'm going on a bit of a tangent here, but the point is clearing the way at the top makes room for a broader range of talent to move up. And that isn't a bad thing.
No, I mean, yeah, I think that's definitely beyond doubt. I mean, I mean, to be clear, are we kind of assuming that this is what's happening in this case? Or are we just saying that as a good outcome of these two people?
Yeah, I'm saying this is a good outcome. The fact that Casey and Mark have moved on means that other people can step up into their place and hopefully not just yet more white males.
Well, yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think one thing that's, I mean, to be honest, it's one thing that's, I'll be corrected, as a kind of a white dude, but I always felt that BioWare was one of the better in the AAA world for having a broad range of characters, good female characters, that kind of thing. So it's always been pretty good at that. And it would, yeah, increasing diversity is always good, and I would like to see, you know, a BioWare game with women in more senior creative roles, not necessarily the kind of the old guard that have been there for so long. So yeah, that's a positive outcome for sure.
No, I agree. BioWare definitely have been brilliant for diversifying the cast of characters and normalizing it in a way. Like I still, the example I always come back to is like the I remember playing Mass Effect 3 and you're chatting away to an engineer in the cargo bay and he just casually mentions his husband. It's not kind of a, and by the way, I'm gay. It's kind of a, oh yeah, my husband's down on Earth, and like, it's so normalized, and like, they've been great for that. But I guarantee I certainly can imagine that the makeup of BioWare isn't as diverse as its games and hasn't been over the years, so hopefully that's kind of improving.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at the thing, I'm actually sort of, I was wondering, you were talking about diversifying, I was like, are they even hiring for anything? And BioWare has no current openings whatsoever, which is very odd. Like, I mean, maybe they just took most of the existing teams and repurposed them towards other games. The Anthem team... the brunt of it is helping out with Mass Effect or the next Dragon Age, but it's just interesting to like look over at the career side and be like, wow, they're not hiring for anything at all.
That was something that confused me a little bit. So I thought this was weird because they said that BioWare Austin studio director Christian Daly is taking over leadership on Dragon Age. And I thought he was in charge of the big Anthem update. I thought that was what BioWare Austin was doing. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe someone is going to correct me.
It's a skeleton team, so...
Yeah, they got it down to about 25 people or something to kind of respec Anthem. But that was going to ramp up from there. But like that was the last time we really understood what was going on, I think.
Yeah, but I thought that was what he was doing. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but that seemed weird. But the other thing is they said that they were explicitly looking for a new general manager. Like, they were conducting a search. They have Gary McKay, Senior Director of Development Operations, serving as interim studio general manager while they do that. And so that, one, kind of lends credence to the thought that this was not something that they had been planning for a long time and had been preparing to change hands. But also, that seems like something they would search for both internally and externally, maybe. Like, I mean, there'd be an opportunity to bring in like some big name elsewhere in the industry, which, you know, I think skews towards a certain demographic, but there would also be an opportunity to promote from within and find people, you know, within who might perhaps already be more diverse and elevate them and put them in charge of making more creative decisions.
Sure. Just to confirm your point here, I've pulled up my own story. Anthem being worked on by a 30-person incubation team led by Christian Daly.
There we go.
That was
okay.
May so, this yeah. year. So.
So I guess I wonder who's in. Is the man still in charge of Anthem as well? I don't know.
It
doesn't take much picking before it all starts to look like a bit of a mess again, does it? Really, but you know.
Yeah, it was weird too covering it, which I mean, I can't get too upset about this, but it was weird because all of the details in the story were scattered across three different blog posts and an IGN news article. Like none of them were all contained in one place. So I, you know, wrote up the facts, you know, based on one blog post, then I'd open the other one to get some more, you know, supporting quotes and information, and then find out there was brand new information in this other blog post that I wasn't aware of before. Very weird.
It's almost like piecing together the story through dialogue trees and the usual form of storytelling.
Audio.
Yeah, so like that's part of the thing. Like, maybe this is a chance to open the doors open and let some more new interesting ideas, or maybe promote some people who were working in lower positions so that they have a little bit more creative freedom. But at the same time, you have a studio that's working on two games that we know nothing about. Keeping Star Wars The Old Republic alive and apparently overhauling Anthem, but
apparently
don't seem to be hiring.
Yeah, and this is the thing, right? Because when a game starts entering full development, that's when you see a lot of open positions start to appear on studio websites. And we've pretty much only seen concept art for Dragon Age so far. So I personally had hoped that they would be kind of really getting into the meat and potatoes of making that game, and seeing no open positions, having kind of what you would imagine sort of creative vision holder type figures leaving. I mean, this is the thing, like, what you want really to make a game the best it can be, regardless of who the team is and regardless of who are the leaders and who has potential and so on and so forth, is stability. Ultimately, EA needs to create a stable environment for BioWare, for to get the best out of BioWare, no matter who's there. And having games kind of going back to the drawing board, having leaders leaving, this is not something that EA would want, I'm sure. And I'm sure it's not something anyone at BioWare wants. But I think we can all say that what we want is a kind of an atmosphere of that studio for it to kind of return to one of its key franchises and make the very best of it that it possibly can, given the right opportunities to, you know, to return to first principles and to kind of revisit what made everybody love the studio in the first place. And you just have to hope that this isn't a signal that that still isn't happening. Not that we can know that for sure.
That is all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't already, do go back and listen to previous episodes. So in particular, the Games of the Generation episode from a couple of weeks ago, and the latest episodes of our Game Developers Playlist and Five Games of Spinoffs. I believe we've got another Game Developers Playlist coming up this week.
Literally yesterday.
Literally yesterday, yes. I should know that because I made the art for it. Phantasy Star Online. Who is your guest for that one?
Fred Horgan from Bossa Studios.
Excellent. So yes, definitely go and give that a listen. You can find all of our episodes on your podcasting platform of choice, and they're all on one feed. There's not like a Game Developers Playlist and a Five Games Of and a new show. It's all on one feed, and you can find that on any podcasting platform, as I've literally just said this second ago, so I'm going to bail now before I muck this up further. You can get more news, insight, and analysis into the world behind video games at gamesindustry.biz.